Good morning to each one of you. It's good to be here this morning, and it's good to have the confidence that God's face is shining upon us. I can't imagine what it would be like to be in a situation or a place in life where he turns his face away. People have experienced that, and it's just wonderful to have the confidence and assurance that his face is shining on us this morning. His face is turned toward us, and I trust that each heart, each face is turned toward him. I have a message that we want to bring this morning. It's a practical type of message. I stand here probably the most vulnerable this morning among any of you, because you get to evaluate whether or not this preacher actually is practicing what he's preaching. But we're going to bring it anyway, and I trust that especially those of you that are parents here this morning can be encouraged in your journey and in your work with your children. So the title for the message is Developing a Taste of God in Our Children. Developing a Taste of God in Our Children. The most powerful member of your body is covered with taste buds. It would not be becoming to attempt an inspection presently. Perhaps you, when you brush your teeth before bed tonight, would be a more fitting time to verify their presence. But your tongue holds approximately 2,000 to 10,000 taste buds. No one is alike in the amount that they possess. Your taste buds are not only located on your tongue, they also reside on the roof of your mouth and even in your esophagus. You have taste buds. Each taste bud has 50 to 100 receptor cells with a tiny hair sticking out of each one. And these hairs evaluate food chemicals in your saliva, which sends a message to your brain as to whether the food is safe, excuse me, whether you should swallow or whether you should spit. If you could see your tongue under a microscope, it would actually look kind of furry. Taste buds live for only 10 to 14 days, and then new ones grow. So they're constantly regenerating. There's five main categories of taste. There's sweet, there's salty, there's sour, there's savory, there's bitter. Your taste and your smell work together. Have you noticed that? Sometimes you taste something and it reminds you of how something smells. If you have a bad cold and your nose is stuffed up, your taste doesn't work very well. I suppose it's possible for something to smell bad and taste good. Maybe Limburger cheese would be one of those examples. Our taste is a gift from God. It makes life enjoyable. Imagine eating a butter tart or a mushroom and onion covered steak or a maraschino cherry if you had no taste. It just wouldn't be the same. Life wouldn't be the same, would it? Some tastes are developed. I learned to like olives. My mother liked olives, and I started to nibble on them a little bit, and now if there's an olive plate on the table, there'll be a pile of olives on my plate. I like olives very much. Psalm 34, verse 8 says, O taste and see that the Lord is good. 2 Peter 2, verse 3 says, If so be ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious. Psalm 119, 103 says, How sweet are thy words unto my taste, yea, sweeter than honey to my mouth. How do we develop a taste for God in our children? Do they come pre-programmed with a love for God and his word? Is it possible for us to give them a false taste of God, and as a result, they want nothing to do with him? One of the thoughts that have been going around in my mind now for, well, it's probably almost a year, and I want to develop a sermon on this, and it's going to be called Hybrid Christianity. And I don't think there is such a thing, but I think it's something that can be very much a danger in our circles, this thing of hybrid Christianity. And I'd like to hear from you what your thoughts are on a subject like that. But I think it's possible for us to develop that kind of a culture in our churches, in our families. For our text today, let's turn to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, familiar verses here. I'd like to read verses 1 to 10. Developing a taste for God in our children. Notice the different attitudes. We talked about spirits this morning. Notice the different spirits. There's, of course, evil spirits. There is a good spirit, fruits of the Spirit. And you'll notice some of those as we read these verses. Ephesians 6, verses 1 to 10. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long upon the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling in singleness of your heart as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there any respect of persons with him. We'll stop reading there, verses 1 to 9. All right, we want to look at 4 points in this message today. And I'd like to use an apple as an illustration. I went to Safeway and found a pretty nice apple. It's a nice red apple, pretty shiny. I think it would taste good. Maybe we'll sample it after church. But I'd like to use this apple as an illustration as to how we can help our children develop a taste for God. If I cut this apple apart, which I'm going to do, all right, you all know how an apple looks in the middle. We've got the seeds in there. There's a few in there, seeds right at the core, right at the middle. That's where we want to start this morning. There's 4 points in this message. There's seed selection, which is directed to directing and introducing our children to God. Secondly is skin protection, or the peeling of the apple, disciplining and discipling our children for God. And then there's stem connection. Every apple will have a stem. And the stem connection is dedicated to connecting our children with God. That is the goal. That is what parenting is all about. And then finally, sweet reflection, which is developing character that reflects God's character. And that is the sweet part of the apple. That's the meat of the apple. That is the goal. That is the end result that we're looking for. You know, it's no coincidence that in the chapter prior here to Ephesians 6, chapter 5, has a lot of teaching regarding the marriage relationship, and that is not our subject this morning. Maybe we should have began there, but our children's taste for God is developed by witnessing and experiencing a home, a dad and a mom who are in love with each other. And I think that's why chapter 5 comes before chapter 6, because that is really the first point. It's really the most important, having parents where there is where Christ's love, where God's love is lived out and is exemplified. Is your marriage a living illustration of Christ's sacrificial love? Do they see kindness? Do they see unselfishness? Do they see sacrifice? Do they see patience and gentleness in their parents? If they aren't seeing those things, it can affect it. It makes it much more difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it can very much affect our children's taste for God. Here in Ephesians 6, verse 4, God gives the fathers the responsibility to bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And of course, both parents are involved in this, but it's the father's responsibility to lead out and to make sure it happens. Passive dads produce domineering moms, which produce frustrated and reactive children. You've probably seen that in in your various observations, but it's important that as dads we take our place in leading out. We have the word here, bring up. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up. That word bring up has the idea of rearing to maturity. It has the idea of cherishing and training. Not yell them up from your lazy boy. Not threaten them up with a deep, gruff voice. Not beat them up with your heavy fist. Not show them up with a belittling spirit. But bring them up alongside you as you're driving on the highway together, as you're relaxing at the end of the day, as you're working together. Bring them up. Also, has the word nurture here. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and that means to educate, it means to tutor, it means disciplinary correction. That is one of the meanings behind that word. I tell you, it takes so much longer many times to show your children how to do it than to simply do it themselves. I remember all the things that I broke growing up. Oh, I drove into a big rock with the lawnmower. I remember that. I turned too sharp with the plow and broke the back wheel off my poor dad. And the apron chain on the manure spreader, if you want to have a bad day, break the apron chain on the manure spreader. That's not a good day when that happens. It takes a lot of patience for a dad to help his son fork off the spreader and fix the chain. But you know what? It's part of the nurturing. It's part of the training. And then it has the word admonition, and that word means to call attention to. It has the idea of mild rebuke or warning. I wonder how many warnings parents give their children in a lifetime. I don't know. Oh, yes, watch your speed. Watch your speed. Don't get home too late. Be careful. Well, and as we get older, the children, the tables turn, and the children start to give mom and dad warnings, and yes, sometimes there's as many dad dents in the truck as anything. I understand that. All right, Proverbs 22, verse 6 says, Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So there in that familiar verse, we have the word train. And the word train is a very critical word. It's critical that we understand what train actually means. And the Hebrew word for train is the word shanak, which in its usage in ancient times had four important ideas. First, the word train or the word shanak had the idea of dedication. And it's a word that would go along with inauguration or dedication. If there was a new king or priest, that is part of the meaning of the word train. Secondly, another idea for the word shanak is to throttle or to narrow or discipline. In Arabic, which is a sister language to Hebrew, this word was used of a rope that was in a horse's mouth. I guess they must have used something like, what do they call that? A bitless bridle is a hackamore, right? Is that what it's called? Is that what they call it? It might have been something like a hackamore, but it had the idea of bringing that animal into submission or bringing it on its will under the control of the master or the rider. Okay, and that idea is connected to this word train. Third, that the idea in shanak is that of instruction. It has the idea of initiating or starting or introducing someone to something. That is all embodied in this word train. And then fourthly, there's another meaning in this, which means to initiate or create an appetite. And apparently this is rooted in the Arabic practice of a midwife who would rub the palate of a newborn with olive oil or crushed dates. I don't know, maybe my mom did that to me and that's why I like olives. I don't know. But it was to develop a taste for. That is embodied in this idea. And that's what they would do. So how do we help our children develop a taste for God? First point is seed selection. So that's at the core of our apple, the seed. It's important we choose the right seeds. It's important we plant the right seeds. It's important we nourish the right seeds because our children come preceded. They come pre-programmed. There is seeds that they are born with that they need mom and dad's help to plant proper seeds, because if those seeds are allowed to grow, it is going to take them to the wrong place. So seed selection, directing, introducing our children to God. There's some interesting facts about the seeds in an apple. Typically, an apple will have 5 to 12 seeds. I'm not sure what this one has. I can see 3 here, but I think there's more inside. And these seeds, they live in protective little chambers inside this apple. And these little chambers are called carpels. It's interesting how God took great care when he designed this apple to protect the seed. Okay, so he put these seeds in a protective little pocket called a carpel. And then these apple seeds also contain a chemical called cyanide. Cyanide is the same chemical that Hitler used in his gas chambers. Now, you can eat apple seeds, at least a few of them, but I believe if you would eat too many, that cyanide would start to have an effect. I don't know how many you would have to eat until you'd start feeling kind of woozy. I'd never had the desire to find out. Another interesting fact, and I cannot verify this by experience, but supposedly an apple, the seeds of an apple, will not grow into a tree like its parent. 9 times out of 10, apple trees grown from seed will produce fruit that is unsuitable to eat. The fruit is sour. It's only good for cider. Apparently, it takes grafting to grow edible apples. I didn't know that. And I believe it's the same way with our children. Unless they are grafted into the true vine, that's the only way they can produce, the only way they can have a sweetness in their life. Isn't that true? I believe it is. In and of themselves, in and of our own efforts, there's only bitterness and sourness. They need to be grafted into the true vine, and at the end of the day, that is really what it's all about, is getting that stem connected to the true vine. That is our goal. That is where we want to end up. All right, what are some seeds that parents must select and plant in their young children's heart that will help to introduce them to God? And I believe we have them in our text here this morning. They're not complicated. You do not need a college degree to understand these. The first one is found in verse 1, and it's that of obedience. Teach them to heed. Seed number 1 is teach them to heed. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Now, this is a directive that is given to the children. But it's understood that parents must teach them how. That's part of our job, is to teach them how. How important is obedience? Is obedience an option? Is it optional for God's children? Does God insist on obedience, or is this book here just a suggestion? What do you think? We all know the answer. Obedience isn't that complicated. It's simply doing as we're told, not as we'd like. It's deferring, it's complying, it's submitting to the will of your authority. Happiness and success in life comes from being able to joyfully obey even when we don't understand or when we don't feel like it. Now, I'm not implying here that there should be a whole list of commands that children just never understand. I believe that part of the teaching program is to help them understand why, but we all know, we've all lived long enough, that many times when God asks us to do something, we don't always understand why. Many of the patriarchs, many of the men of faith, men and women of faith, they acted in obedience and did not understand where they were going or what God was doing with them. Children that are taught to obey are happy, secure children. And I wonder if so many of the diagnosed disorders in children today are a result of a permissive culture that promotes leaving a child to themselves and not insisting on obedience. Now, I realize there's various disorders and there's various reasons and there's various, it's not all linked to that, but I believe in part it is. And I was just reading recently, as I was scrolling through the news, there was a headline that caught my attention, and it went something like this, something about how parents are leaving the gentle parenting method and going back to more of a stricter or type of parenting. That was the gist of the article. That was the gist of the article, and I think it's something we need to be aware of. Of course, I believe in gentle parenting. I really do. I believe that what we do needs to be done with gentleness. But gentleness is not just letting a child do whatever it wants to do, however, whenever, and we try and negotiate and we try and coax. No, that doesn't end up at the destination we want to be at. You know, you don't damage a child's creativity when you teach them to obey. In fact, you enhance it because it frees them from the clutches of their selfishness, and it opens their minds and hearts to following the instruction of someone who knows what is best for them. Yes. Teach them that no means no. Don't get tired of teaching that. You know, Proverbs 29, verse 15 says that a child left to himself brings his mother to shame. I believe that. We've seen the results of that. Teach them to be still, to sit still, to play quietly, to come when you say come. And that is a full-time job at that stage in life. Teach them that church is a place to sit still on the bench. And I don't think you don't really need to do a lot of teaching in church. I don't think that there's ever a place where you shouldn't. There's stages and times when you need to. But I think the majority of our teaching is best done in the privacy and quietness of our own homes. I know of a parent that had their children practice sitting still at home on the couch during the week. They would have sitting still sessions. I don't know how that would have went with me if my mom would have tried it. I guess it worked in that situation. Teach them the blessing of joyful, willing obedience. Notice here in verse 7, I pointed out it before we read these verses to look at the attitudes that are found in these verses. And what happens here from verses 5 to 9, this is the consequence, or this is the result of if we get verses 1 to 4 right. Then verses 5 to 9, these attitudes here, they start to express themselves. And where they express themselves is where the rubber meets the road, when they get into real life experience. So notice here in verse 7, it says willingly. We're talking here about willing obedience. It says with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men. Goodwill from the heart. You know, it makes for a happy parent, it makes for a happy child, it makes for a happy employer 16 years down the road. Our attitude, our spirit as parents, so it greatly impacts the atmosphere of our home and our children's attitude. I tell you, it doesn't take much for attitudes to go downhill. I don't know how you find it, but I don't think that ever changes. It doesn't take much effort to have a bad attitude. It takes a lot more effort to have good attitudes. And you know what? I just want to encourage each one of you to keep working on that. Keep letting God work in our hearts and help us to have good attitudes. Good attitudes just affect everything. You know, if we're negative and critical, that's the spirit that our children are going to be infected with. It just is, because that's the atmosphere they're in. I probably told you this story before, but it's one of my favorite stories. It's a story about Muhammad's horses. According to legend, Muhammad had 5 favorite mares from which supposedly the pure Arabian bloodline was produced. And after a long journey through the hot burning desert, Muhammad and his herd of horses arrived at an oasis, and they were all desperately in need of a long refreshing drink. Muhammad decided to test the loyalty of his herd. He turned them loose, but before the frantic herd reached the water, he blew his bugle. And his horses had been trained to come to him at the call of his bugle. They'd been trained to come immediately. So as they're running towards this water at this oasis, desperately thirsty, he blows his bugle. And five mares stopped, turned, and came back to him in spite of their burning thirst. And I just like that story. It illustrates unconditional obedience. These horses had learned that the will of their master exceeded their own desires. And, you know, that is the goal. That is something that all of us are working on in our lives this morning, whether you're a parent or not a parent, whatever stage in life you're at, to have that kind of trust, to have that kind of obedience to our master, is a tremendous challenge for me. All right, secondly, the next seed that must be selected to be planted in our children's hearts is we must teach them to honor. So first of all, it's teach them to heed, and secondly, it's teach them to honor. Verse 2 talks about this. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long upon the earth which the Lord thy God hath. However that finishes, you know how it's one of the Ten Commandments. Again, it's a directive to our children, but they don't come pre-programmed with this virtue either. But it's something that must be taught, because it will affect their relationship with God, and it will affect their relationship with other people. Now, when you honor someone or something, you value them, you show reverence to them, you count them as a prize asset in your life. Again, the kind of seed that must be planted by example. Back in Ephesians 5, verse 33, a wife is commanded to reverence. That word reverence means be in awe of her husband, to build him up. That's one of the commandments to the wife. It's an honor thing. Don't criticize him or mock him. Be careful about correcting him in front of the children. Sort out your disagreements and frustrations, and don't tell me you don't have any, because we all do. Sort those out in private. Don't be a Barristan Bear mom. It doesn't just apply to the ladies. 1 Peter 3, verse 7 tells husbands to give honor unto the wife. Treat her with dignity. Treat her as something precious and valuable. Don't shame her or subtly make fun of her or use her as a scapegoat for your shortcomings. You know, our children learn so much about honor by what they observe. Honoring others is about preferring them. It's about putting them ahead of our desires, our wishes, and finding joy in doing that. It's not just an obligation. Honor needs to go far beyond an obligation, or we totally miss the point. Honor needs to be something that is done joyfully because we want to. Teach your children to get along with others. Don't let them bully or push siblings or other children around. They need to be taught those things. It's part of their natural makeup to do those kinds of things. Teach them the lessons of giving up what they want for the benefit of someone else. I still remember an incident I had as a child, and this happened. It was in a secondhand store with my cousin and our mothers before I was in school. So I was probably 3 or 4 years old. And my cousin, his family lived right next door, the farm next door to us, maybe, I don't know, a quarter mile apart. And we did everything together. Our dads shared the equipment, and we worked together, helped each other in harvest. And anyway, this was secondhand shopping day. And my cousin's mother and my mother was probably only, I don't know, 24 or 25 years old. And we went off to the Marion Center down in Kitchener, the secondhand store, and there was a nice red fire truck there. Oh, it was a beauty. I think it was a Tonka, you know, one of those nice metal Tonkas with the extendable ladder that you could crank out. And problem was, there was two boys and only one truck. And I don't remember what all happened, but there was tears and cryings and sighings, and I ended up getting the truck. I remember that. I ended up getting the truck. But what stands out most to me in my mind from that incident yet today is it did not make me happy. That's the thing I remember. I remember, above all else, I got the truck, but it did not make me happy. And I still have this bad feeling of taking what I knew he wanted. And it doesn't feel very nice. That's what I get to live with. He's probably forgotten that truck. I don't know if he didn't even remember it anymore, but I remember it. And it's probably for that reason. Teach them to honor everyone, not just those who are popular. You know, it seems the girl genes, maybe they have a bit more of a bent tendency to cliques. And mothers, you do wise. You do be wise to those games, because that's what they are. And they can cause deep hurts. Also, it's important that we don't feed the victim mentality in our children. We're talking here about honoring. We're talking here about seeing the value in others and helping our children to see the value in others. And, you know, unfair situations come along in life. And the sooner we learn that, the sooner they learn that, the happier they are. And then we can feed those unfair situations and we can help them wallow in it, or we can help them simply accept it and make sure they don't do to others what they don't like having done to them. Plant seeds of honor for authority. I know this can be difficult, especially when authority has stepped out of God's order. But I believe that even in those situations, you can use them as an opportunity to teach how to respond when their demands are not realistic, and also how to appeal in a respectful way. Teach your children how to appeal in a respectful way. There is a respectful way to appeal. 1 Peter 2, verse 18, it talks there, it's in the context of employment again, and it talks about obeying the masters, and it says, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. You're going to run across some froward, unreasonable people in life. That's simply how it is. And sometimes we run into civil authority, sometimes we run into various types of authority that it feels are being unreasonable. There is a blessing. There is a blessing in being able to live out the principle of honor even in those situations. Remember, two wrongs don't make a right. Just because he got upset and flew off the handle doesn't make it right for me. Let's turn to 1 Peter 2, verse 17. There's a nice, short, powerful little verse here in 1 Peter 2. Verse 17. I like this verse. I believe that if you follow this verse, especially in relation to the honor principle, you're going to be an honorable kind of a person. You're going to be a kind of a person that people can respect. Your children will be the kind of people, become the kind of people that can be respected. Very simple. Honor all men. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the king. 1, 2, 3, 4. There you have it. Plant the seed of honor, and it will help set your child's heart in the direction to honor and fear God and experience blessing and happiness in life. Well, the next point is that of skin protection, disciplining and discipling our children for God. But we don't have time to get through that, so we're going to stop here. Maybe some other day we'll carry on with this. But may God bless you as parents. I just want to commend you this morning. From what I can see from my little corner, you are all doing a very good job. Yes, life is real. Yes, it's not easy. But my encouragement to you is keep up the good work, and may God bless each one of you with wisdom. Let's have a closing song.